Are you there, Nancy?
I'm here.
Okay, let's get started. I'm going to start out with the music, and then we will get into your book.
Oh, wonderful.
Coop sitting in for Pam Stack tonight on Authors on the Air, and I have the great pleasure of having Nancy Cole Silverman with me here tonight to discuss the book number 4 in her Carol Child Mystery series. The book we'll be talking about tonight is Room for Doubt, which opens up tomorrow. Nancy has a long history in both writing and radio, and credits the fact that she and Edgar Allan Poe share the same birthday. So after she went from writing commercial copy and news, she left radio to write fiction. Today she is well published and lives in Los Angeles with her husband, 4 children, and a thoroughly pampered standard poodle. I'd like to welcome Nancy to the show tonight. Hello.
Hi, Terry. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Absolutely. And our connection seems to be a little glitchy tonight. If I happen to drop off, you just keep talking on about your book, and I'll be back on. It takes me about a minute to reconnect.
Okay.
And you spent most of your working career in radio, so you can certainly understand that.
Yes, I probably can, and I'm used to that suddenly, okay, and take it away.
Exactly. Somebody behind the scenes stretching it out. So why don't you start with that, about your career in radio?
Okay. I got into radio kind of by an accident. Going through college, I was interested in writing. I had a background a little bit in theater arts and speech and journalism. And then I really got interested in journalism. And, of course, that led into television and radio. And I was actually one of the first women on the air back in Phoenix back in the early 70s. And that's before women were really given anything terribly serious to do. And the reason was is our voices were just considered too light and feminine for anything terribly serious. So they didn't want to give us anything terribly serious. It would upset us. and so I survived that period. That's kind of my entry into the business. And I was married very young and actually came to California about mid-70s, but mm-hmm. I hadn't worked in television. And so my television doors were really closed to me very early on. And so I stayed in radio, and I loved it. It really taught me to write.
What kind of shows or what kind of work did you do in radio?
You know, I've been what they call like both sides of the desk. I worked in news. I've worked in as a commercial copywriter. I worked on the business side. I retired as the general manager of a sports radio station here in Los Angeles. There were only 2 women general managers at the time in radio in the country, and I was the only female general manager of a sports radio station, which, Terry, is only proof that God has a sense of humor.
Awesome.
I really got that job because I really wanted to advance my career and my experience level, but I was not really all that much of a sports enthusiast. But it was a good experience for me to have, and so I did that. And the station sold about 3 years later, which was kind of my exit from radio. And at that point, I thought, fine. The station had sold to a Korean format, and I don't know about you,
mm-hmm.
but I don't speak any Korean, so it was not a
nope.
chance to stay on.
You can get by. Yeah, you can get by about with sports, but you can't get by with Korean. There's
yeah, I
was, no way to say that.
That wasn't going to work. So I decided this was a good time to exit. And, you know, they say you can take the girl out of radio, but you can't take the radio out of the girl. So I came home and I thought, I've had a fascinating career. I've met some very different, interesting people. And each day I never knew what I was going to face. And it was really a matter of, because it was, I had so many different types of jobs, that I thought, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to make up a radio station. And damn it, if I can't go back to radio, well, I'll make up my own radio station. I'll have my own fun here. And so I came up with the Carol Childs Mysteries. And that's kind of bending the truth very little.
Tell us, before we get into your, specifically into your books, tell us about Carol Childs as a person. How much of her is autobiography?
Well, Carol is much ballsier than I ever was, but you know, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback when you don't have the pressure of the instant moment right on top of you. You know, I would love to have been as outspoken and as aggressive as she was, and as confident. Most of us are never as confident as our characters are on the page. But that makes for an interesting character, because just like, you know, what makes news is anything that's really unusual. You know, dog bites man isn't news. Man bites dog, that's news. You create that man as a character on the page, he's going to be something that nobody is either going to like or is going to find very interesting. So you have to create a character that's a little bit, you know, beyond the everyday. So Carol is, you know, she's a single mother, which I was, so I could relate to that. And it was very important to me that I write a character that women could relate to, because I grew up, came into opportunities when women were said, oh, yes, you can have it all. And you know what? We can have it all, but we don't get to have it all the time, all at once. And so Carol is constantly doing a little bit of this balancing act, and I wanted to bring that into my book. So things don't always work out real well for her. Sometimes, you know, she has to kind of backpedal in order to keep a balanced life with her two growing children and a job of which her general manager, who is a 21-year-old whiz kid about half her size and half her weight, doesn't really want her to work for him and calls her the world's oldest cub reporter. And, you know, well, she's going to do something about that. She wants to prove she is qualified for that, and he sends her on all kinds of terrible assignments, you know, to prove that. And we've seen that in the first couple of books, and she's starting to kind of earn her wings now.
That's great. And in the series from book 1 through 4, are they linear time-wise? Like, are the kids getting older? Is her life or career either moving up or down in kind of the time frame that it would happen in real life?
Yes, and thank you for asking that. Yeah, I think it's important to do that. Yeah, I wanted to start Carol at about, you know, midlife. She's just about 38, 39 in book one, and she turns 40 in book three. And that's a pivotal moment in a young woman's life, because she realizes she's really no longer... she starts wearing mom jeans. you're no longer the 20-something. You know, you can get away with that for a while, and then you're really a serious adult. And your teenage kids look at you as mom, not cool. And so, yeah, there is a progression there.
And that's interesting, because I noticed in your new book, the one that's coming out tomorrow, Room for Doubt, it's the night before her son's 16th birthday party. She's got this huge party arranged, and she gets called out at zero dark 30 on some what she has no clue about. That seems very authentic, you know, something that a mom would really have to balance.
Right, right. You know, because she doesn't usually get called out at 5:30 in the morning. She's got a woman who's come in and has helped her with the house, and so her teenage son has yet to get up out of bed and gone to school, and she usually kind of sees him off the door, and her boss is called and says, hey, there's a body hanging on the Hollywood sign, and I need you up there to find out. And she's going, oh, come on, this is some stunt, some Hollywood movie stunt. That can't be. And it's not unusual, you know, here in L.A., people do try to reword the Hollywood sign. We had that done several months ago where it was from Hollywood to Hollyweed. So that mm-hmm. sign is a target from time to time. But she's wrong. He says, no, 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 get up there. This is serious. And she gets up there, and indeed there is a body up there. And she would ordinarily be reporting on this in depth, except the cops say, it's a suicide. And you know, that is not a story reporters ever try to cover. You know, there's a certain respect for privacy and so forth and something like that. Unless it's a big issue, then you have to kind of work around that.
And that's interesting. And I did not know that. And that's one of those places where your background in radio and news reporting shows through in the authenticity. I didn't know that rule about suicides. And that colors how she reacts.
Right. And it's something I try to include in my book so that people understand. You know, we get the news we tune to. You don't necessarily get the truth in the news. You get the news you tune to. You can find whatever you want on the channel. You can say, I want to find that, and you're going to find that, or you're going to find whatever you want. So I've tried to kind of cover those things so that, well, this may, on the surface, appear like, oh, kind of a light read. The nuances between the lines will help a reader kind of understand why you get the news you get and what's happening behind the scenes a little bit.
And that is fascinating. I love it. So onward. Now, Carol has got this new show that's been put on, is on in the wee dark of the morning. And she thinks that it's going to be the place where her career goes to die. And I can totally, having a new show, that there's this, like, you want to be successful and you have no clue what's going to happen. So, but what happens? What happens when she is suddenly out there in the wee hours of the night?
And this is indeed where they start. This is indeed where they start new talent. And so Carol is kind of working her way up the ladder, and her radio station has sold, for the third time in 3 years. So she's got a new boss and basically a new format. It's still talk. But her boss has said, you know, I'm going to put you out at 11 o'clock. Let's see how you do. And, you know, then maybe we'll work you into something a little more, what we call, you know, mainstream time, drive time. But not yet. And so she's got a Sunday night show, and she's really excited about that. And her boss, this young fellow who thinks he's God's gift to news, has given her an assignment to cover. The topic of the day is going to be the L.A. River Project, which is just as dry as the L.A. River. And she really knows that she's done all kinds. She's boned up on this, trying to make it interesting, and she has no callers. There is nobody at the switchboard calling and trying to get to her. And, of course, in the opening scene of the book, when she is called out to this murder, she's later told that there was a young PI out there that didn't think it was a suicide either. And he's come by the station while Carol is giving this big birthday party for her son, and you get the pressure of the birthday party and, you know, who's going to show up but the ex-husband and the new wife, and, you know, you have all these complex issues that go on. And her boss shows up at the birthday party, says, oh, yeah, I need you tomorrow morning. I want you to go out back to the scene of the crime and meet with this PI because he said some things I think you should find out about. And this is just not something she wants to do, but she's kind of got to do it in order to, you know, you've got to keep everybody happy. You've got a job, and, you know, there's no guarantee. You're an employee at will. And so she goes out to meet this fellow, and he goes on and he says, you know, this is a murder. And he says, it's not only a murder here. And he says, I'm covering other murders, and this is a cover-up, and the police are in on it, and I don't know what's going on, but it's a big deal, and I need you to help me. And he says, I need you to talk about it Sunday night on your new show. And she goes, oh, no way. I'm not going to do this. He wants, you know, he's got all kinds of, you know, real eccentric and far-out ideas, and she does not want her first show to be, you know, labeled as being, you know, kind of dealing with the crazies out there in the world that call in. And call in and talk radio stations. They all call in after 10 o'clock at night and overnight. You're going to get every crazy in the world confessing everything.
But she gets quite the call that night.
Yeah, she does. She gets a call that night from a woman called Mustang Sally. And Mustang Sally is calls in, and she says, she wants to talk about the body on the Hollywood sign. And she says, and there's going to be more. And so that kind of sets the pace of the book. And this fellow is determined that, see, she's got somebody to call out from Radioland who knows something about the murder. And Carol is thinking she's dealing with somebody who's just a crazy person. She can't imagine anybody would really call in and confess to something. And the cops have said it's a suicide, and she didn't really think it is, but maybe. So that kind of is a setting for the book. The whole idea behind this book, though, was to kind of get people to start to think of, why, what will be the motive behind something like this? And when the motive is revealed to her, it's really causes her to question her thinking about things, about how she views right and wrong.
One of the blurbs that was received for your books are page turning cozy with a dollop of noir. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I like the dollop of noir. Yeah, I like that. I think I've been a little hard for people to classify because, well, I'm not a traditional cozy at all. Although there's no swear words in my book because we couldn't use them in radio. I worked for, traditional radio. You couldn't use a four-letter word in radio and you would have lost your license, so you're not going to find those in my book. But you're going to find...
And that's another...
Harder, you're going to find a much harder edge to some of the mystery, and far more layered than a traditional cozy. It's really more of a mainstream Missy with a little bit lighter touch. And I have to tell you, I think if my name was Norman Silverman, nobody would question it as a cozy. They would just call it as a mainstream mystery.
Well, I didn't mind that when I read your book, the calling it a cozy so much as it is. There's a lot of interaction between the character. It's character driven, as you said. There's not the hard language and that type of thing. So it made it approachable for someone who may not be into some of these real, slasher mystery thrillers that are out there, and for somebody who really wanted to get into the characters, into their heads, and into their lives. So that's what I caught. I mean, you really go through this with Carol from the time she's putting the post-y note on the Cheerios for her son saying, I'll see you soon, mm-hmm. all through everything that she has to go through. And you've got a fascinating cast of characters. Tell us about this psychic.
Oh, Misty Dawn. Misty Dawn showed up in book one because if you live in L.A., there's a psychic placard out in front of on every corner. it's just LA has a lot of psychics, and of course some of the psychics in LA have been very famous. We've had psychics to the stars. I mean, not only in just LA. I mean, Ronald Reagan's wife had a psychic visit her and kind of consult with her. So this is across the country, whether people are into that or not. They're certainly there. This particular psychic had been a very famous psychic and had come out to California in the 60s in her little hippie painted van selling love potions. And life for many young people back in the 60s who grew up and they made it well, they thought, well, this money was always going to be there. But as you get older and your memory starts to fade and your hips beginning to widen, she didn't have as much business anymore. And she started to fall on hard times. So suddenly she is out of work, and she shows up on Carol's doorstep because Carol has been good to her and kind of comes into the house when Carol's upstairs in the shower because her cat came in the door, and she just followed the cat in the door and is hungry and starts looking through the refrigerator, and Carol comes down after she's seen this murder and kind of washing her hair and thinking, I've got to think of something else and kind of clean myself up. She comes down, and there is Misty Dawn. Misty Dawn is in her kitchen, and once again we have Misty Dawn back in her life. And Missy is a gentle soul, and she is very clairvoyant. She has a lot of feelings about things, but Carol is not convinced that there's anything really to that. So there's always that little kind of, how did you know that? And Misty sometimes teases her and says, well, it's easy. I just figured it out. Or sometimes, oh, trust me. So you never quite know how much she's playing Carol or she really has this clairvoyant ability.
Well, one of my favorite lines is when Misty kind of walks by Carol and says, is the guest room still at the top of the stairs? Like, she totally belonged there.
Yeah.
And it's like, what time is dinner? And, are you still out of towels type of thing? And that was perfect because that brought her into the story very well. So I want to ask on this. This is book four in your series. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted to, and it's coming out tomorrow, if someone took a look at this and said, I don't want to go all the way back to the beginning of the series, could they pick up book four and be able to enjoy the story
easily,
and the characters?
Right. And part of this is because of coming from a news background where you know, you had to pick up a story from that had been maybe the day before above the fold on the front page, and now it's transitioned 3 or 4 pages below the fold, and you've got about 4 inches. Is you've got to be able to collapse and summarize. And having come from a news background, and particularly radio, where you didn't have a picture to help you out, I think it helped me to kind of weave backstory in with minimal effort. And so there isn't a problem, I don't think, in picking up before and going from there and starting there. You
can
kind
agree.
Of move around.
And I'll agree. I found book 4 to be enjoyable on its own, and you did a good job weaving in the little tiny bits of backstory, you know, kind of like where Misty came from, in a sense, type of thing. So I kind of knew where it was. Are you there?
I'm here. I am.
Okay. Sorry. On my end, like I said, our connection is just a little bit glitchy tonight. I noticed that your publisher, Henry Press, has
mm-hmm.
put book 1 on sale for 99 cents. And
mm-hmm.
book 2 on sale for $2.99. And I wanted to let the listeners know that if they wanted to stock up on your Carol Childs mysteries right now, this is the time to do it while your new book is coming out.
I felt like that's a 30-second commercial. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Henry Press
has been
wonderful. They've done a very good job with helping get the word out and support. And, you know, it's a team effort. I have to really take a moment, and I'll even expand on that commercial, because anytime a writer
mm-hmm.
sits down and you write a book, you know, you're in the middle of the forest, and you're a writer too, you know, Terry, so you know
mm-hmm.
you're thinking, you're scratching your head, and you've got that first blush of an idea, and it says, oh, this is just great, and then you get in that muddy middle, and you kind of just push through to the end, and at the end of the draft, you think, I think I've got something here, but it really takes a good editor to really kind of help you kind of say, oh, wait
mm-hmm.
a minute, expand here, or collapse here, or you totally lost me there, and they've got a wonderful house there, and I really am very fortunate to be with them.
I've got a couple of friends who are published through them, and they basically say the same thing, that Henry is an extremely good press to work with. And now I know all you're thinking about is book 4 dropping tomorrow, but I'm going to go ahead and put you on the spot. Any thoughts about book 5?
Oh, I'm working on it. And, you know, that's the problem. I have to tell you, you know, not only that, I am working on a spinoff series. Misty Dawn is going to come back in a series of her own. But
oh, my goodness.
I've done that. I've done some, you know, some things with that, and I kind of worked some short stories and things to kind of see for myself, really, what that world would look like. And I started to get into it, and I thought, okay, I liked where that was going, and so I'm trying to finish up book 5 here because I don't know why, because I do. I've got book 5. It's 3/4 of the way done, and I'm hoping that I'll have it out next year sometime. That'll be up to Henry, of course, but anyway, I am working on that, and I do like that. But I would like to start this other series at some point. So, yeah, it does keep me going. Writers write, and if you don't write, it's like a piano player. If you don't play the piano, you can't just hope to sit down at a party one day and start playing. You have to practice every day.
Mm-hmm. And when did book 1 come out? How long has this series been going on?
Oh, let's see. When did book 1 come out? Let's see. Shadow of Doubt came out in 2000. And just trying to find that. Just trying to pick up a book and see when that came out. I think 2000. I don't know. 14.
Has
maybe?
It been about one year? Yes.
It's been one
book
a year.
Book 1, Shadow.
Yeah.
Book 1 is Shadow of a Doubt,
and
book 2 is Beyond a Doubt.
Right.
Book 3 is Without a Doubt.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of doubt in my life, don't I?
Well, no, at least Carol does, because book 4 is Room for Doubt.
Mm-hmm. And
Carol is.
Yeah. We'll continue
so
with that. We're going to continue
with
doubt for a while.
mm-hmm.
At some point,
I love
I'll
your
have to
covers,
kind of...
too.
Oh, they're wonderful, and again, I thank Henry Press for those. They've been very good. Yeah, they like to kind of stick with a theme, and my grandmother's name was Childs, and so my mother's middle name was Coral, and Coral was not quite fitting, so I made it Carol Childs and kind of framed it after the strong women in my family who have been very influential on me, because they would have been Carol. They very much, they would have been a better Carol than I was. And so I really made them the Carol Child's mysteries after them, and took pieces of their personality to kind of do this, because my mother was a very forward-thinking, just do it type of gal. And so I created that character after that. And, you know Carol a little bit because of her best friend, Sherry, who is, that's always a good trick for a writer, is to have a best friend or another character, because you have to bounce ideas off. And it is through the personality and the responses of that best friend that you get to know your character. And so one of the reasons there's the feeling that you know Carol so well is there's a real loyalty, almost a sisterhood between these two women who have sons the same age, so it made sense that they would be pals. They're both single moms and have that in common and support one another.
And that can make your characters very accessible, as opposed to just the, you know, laconic, steel-jawed male hero that we see so often in mysteries. You know, women have friends. And that makes that helps move the story forward.
Mm-hmm. And we talk.
And,
you know, women will confide in one another. And even though there is times where Carol is probably not supposed to share things, you know, Sherry has a way of bringing out the big bottle of red wine and saying, okay, I'm not going to say anything, but you want the wine? Okay, you know, tell me what's going on. So, you know, you get a little bit of that. And you get that you know, that kind of camaraderie that, you know, we like it in TV sets, you know, in TV shows, where you've got the two women that are playing off of each other and they support one another. And, you know, they may go through thick and thin with boyfriends and men in their life, but they're there for each other.
Now, a little bit about just on your writing process. Are all the Carol Child books in first person?
Yes, they are. Uh-huh. I felt that was important. Go ahead.
And why did you choose that? No, why did you choose that? That was going to be my next question. Why did you choose that?
Well, for one thing, for me, it was relief. It was a different voice to write in, because in news, everything is you know, closer. If you're going to cover a news story, it's close to third person. It's not third person. It's news style, but that's closer to third person. And I wanted to get away from that. I really wanted to have a personality where you could hear and feel their reaction. I liked that, and it was. Kind of, it just fit. I started writing one of them in third person at one time, the first one, and I immediately thought, what's going on? It just wasn't working. I wasn't getting as close as I wanted. I wasn't getting that internal feeling. And with Carol, it's very important because Carol is that woman who is middle-aged, who's been trying to reinvent herself and go through those challenges of parts of her life that have to do with a job that she's wanted, and maybe it's working out, and rejection, and the competition between other women in the station, and children, and her boss, and I couldn't get that from third person.
And I think, no, and it definitely works, too. It puts you into Carol's head and all the different things that a working mom has to be thinking about at the time. You know, it's not just all about the mission. She still
feel I could do that through third person as well. You know, it seemed to me in the back of Carol's mind is always, how am I going to help my kid get to soccer practice or baseball practice or my daughter's college tuition paid or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, that was great. And then second, just on your own, like I said, your personal writing process and everything, do you write every day? Do you...
I do. I find my most creative time early in the morning. I will generally put in about 4 hours a day, a couple hours in the morning early. Then I go out, I run my errands. But, you know, that B-reel is always going. And I think writers have to know that B-reel goes whether you have it in your forward thought or not. Because writers tend to be, I've been called aloof. I don't know that was such a good thing, but I think it's because we are thinking in the back of our mind. We can be present in a party, you can be present with friends, but in the back of your mind, you're still thinking, how are you going to bridge those two scenes, or how are you going to advance your character? How realistically is she going to find that next clue, so that your readers aren't just saying, "Ah, you can't do that. That's coincidental." You know, you can have one coincidence in a book. You can't have a lot. You know. And even one is a little iffy. So you're always working on it. So then I'll get back in the afternoon, kind of read again what I wrote in the morning, maybe kind of sharpen some things up, and then I'll make notes to myself before I go to bed. And generally by the time I wake up in the morning, I kind of know that next direction. I'm a kind of a quasi-pantser plotter. So I start out, I never write by word count, I write by scene. And I will write a couple scenes, whether they're sequential scenes or not, it doesn't matter. Lots of times there's dots in between them, and then I'll go back and fill in, and then I'll move them around sometimes. But it's a process of building. It's a little like if you've ever watched anybody, I grew up in the Arizona deserts, and I used to watch the Indians weave their blankets. So if you think about, okay, I'm going to have a blanket, it's going to be this big, and I'm going to have it, it's going to be red and browns and maybe a little purples, and I need to go back in and add that yellow. And you'd watch it. And I think writing is something like that.
And I will, on your where you're always thinking about it, no matter where you are, I'll share a little anecdote of my own. I was sitting by myself having lunch in a restaurant, a local diner, trying to work out a very, very difficult scene in my head, very, very difficult. And this nice little old lady comes over, and she sits across from me, and she goes, "Are you okay? You look so sad." And I'm like, "Oh, huh, what? No, I'm fine. And it's like I was, like I said, I was just trying to work out the mechanics of an extremely difficult scene. And evidently it showed on my face as I was sitting there. So, yeah, we never stop writing, ever stop.
No,
we
don't.
Writing.
And, you know, sometimes later it's no accident that that little old lady came over and did that, because sometimes that's exactly the type of thing you need to insert in order to explode the scene to make it come together again. You have to trust what the universe is giving you sometimes.
Definitely. Well, I always finish up. The last question that I ask everybody is, what are you reading?
Well, I read a lot of Sue Grafton and Janet Ivanovich. I like both of those series. I have been a big fan of Agatha Christie. Gosh, I also like love. Oh, my dog is here. My big standard pampered poodle. she's trying to tell me I've been to doggy training class today. Down, not doing very well. And I, Harlan Coben, Stephen King. I'm always reading other works of other authors that are lesser known, that are kind of experimenting, coming around, particularly people who I know through Sisters in Crime and Mystery Writers of America, who say, "Oh, would you read my manuscripts?" and that type of thing. I would say my reading, I've always got something going, but those would be my immediate go-to. I was just going to say Alexandra Sokolov. I love her for suspense. She's just great, too.
Yes, definitely. Well, I just want to say good luck with book 4 in your series, Room for Doubt, which is out tomorrow from Henry Press. It looks like your pre-orders have been doing fairly well, and I hope it just kills it for you.
Oh, thank you, and good luck with your show. You asked very good questions. I enjoyed being here tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, and I expect to see you back when we get our next Carol Childs book out, or Misty Dawn book.
Okay, so I'll have to say stay tuned.
That just sounds heaven. And now I've got a couple of little housekeeping things I have to do. I just have to say that this is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and you can follow us on Facebook to stay up to date on all of our latest broadcasts. And support for this broadcast is made possible by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction, 6 years of publishing, and 6 Anthony nominations. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so. And you can check them out at downandoutbooks.com. And I highly recommend them for some very hard-edged noir mystery. I think you might enjoy it. And thanks for coming on, Nancy, and I look forward to talking to you, and I'll see you around Facebook.
Oh, Terry, thank you so much. You have a lovely evening. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.